All right, let's dive in, shall we? Today we're going somewhere pretty personal, I think.
Oh.
Yeah, we're stepping right into the life of an army officer.
Okay, love that. Where and when are we talking?
Mississippi, January 1943.
Okay, right in the thick of World War II.
Right. And our source, a letter he wrote. Seriously, it's like you're right there with him.
Fascinating. What kind of things did he write about?
Oh, all sorts of stuff. Frigid southern weather.
Wait, frigid in Mississippi?
That's what I thought, but he says it was 6 degrees.
Wow, no kidding.
And he was even bundled up in his winter coat inside.
That's a detail you don't usually get in the history books.
Right. It makes you think, huh?
It does, yeah. Makes you think about all the challenges they faced.
Exactly. Even something as simple as staying warm. Okay, so besides shivering indoors, what else was going on?
Well, he describes a whole mix of activities, actually. It shows just how diverse the responsibilities of an officer were, even outside of the combat. He attended lectures, oversaw inspections,
And
and he witnessed a court-martial.
a court martial. What's that exactly?
Essentially, it's a military court. It's
Yeah.
where they try members of the armed forces for offenses against military law.
Oh, so this was serious business.
Absolutely. The charges could range from minor infractions to serious crimes.
Wow. What was the case about in this instance?
A soldier was accused of being drunk on duty and disobeying orders.
Oh, that's not good.
No, not at all. And what's interesting is how conflicted the officer seems about the situation. He mentions that the soldier had a good record up until this point.
I see. So it wasn't a clear-cut case.
Right. He was wrestling with the balance of maintaining order, but also considering individual circumstances. It's that human element that makes this so compelling.
It really is. So what happened to the soldier in the end?
Well, he was found guilty. And because of that, the court handed down a sentence of 6 months in the stockade and forfeiture of two-thirds of his pay.
6 months. That's pretty harsh.
It does highlight the strictness of military justice during wartime.
It makes you think about the pressure these soldiers were under, even away from the battlefield. Oh, and he also mentioned some pretty unique physical training.
Oh, yeah? What kind?
Something about knee-knocking exercises.
Knee-knocking. What in the world is that?
Apparently, it involves standing up and down repeatedly while holding a rifle. Doesn't sound like much fun, does it?
My knees hurt just thinking about it.
I know, right? But I wonder, was there a strategic purpose behind it?
Oh, almost certainly. Keep in mind, this was 1943, and training doctrines were evolving rapidly. They were preparing for large-scale combat, which demanded incredible physical and mental toughness.
So maybe it was about simulating the fatigue and stress of prolonged engagements.
That's a good possibility, getting them used to operating under duress.
It's interesting to think about how training methods have changed over time. Pretty sure those knee-knocking drills wouldn't fly in a modern gym.
Probably not. But on a serious note, it really highlights the physical demands these soldiers faced.
Absolutely. It wasn't just about strategy, it was about being able to endure incredible physical challenges. And speaking of challenges, maybe we should move on to what I think is the most visually stunning part of this letter.
Oh, what's that?
The artillery demonstration.
He describes being driven out to this observation point, right? With like 100 other officers.
700. Wow.
Yeah. Picture this convoy,
Okay, I'm picturing it.
like 40 trucks winding through the Mississippi countryside.
That's quite a sight.
You can practically feel the anticipation building as they got closer, right?
Oh, absolutely.
And he mentions they were positioned on a hill overlooking the target area.
Did he say anything about what kind of artillery they were demonstrating?
Oh, he did, yeah.
What kinds?
It seems like a mix of howitzers and mortars.
Those were the big guns back then, right?
Absolutely, the workhorses of artillery during World War II.
So I'm imagining these officers on a hillside, howitzers and mortars in front of them, this target area off in the distance.
Then the demonstration began.
Okay, here we go.
He talks about witnessing all these different types of shells being fired.
Like what?
Some were high explosive rounds designed to, just obliterate enemy troops and fortifications.
Wow.
And others, well, they might have been incendiary shells, the kind that start fires and create chaos.
That's intense.
He calls it an awesome sight.
I bet. I can only imagine what it must have been like to witness that kind of firepower firsthand.
He even describes, like, the concussive force of the explosions, the ground shaking beneath their feet.
Whoa.
He even mentions this one small charge, right? It moved a target 50 feet.
50 feet. Just from a small charge.
Just to give them an idea of the raw power they were dealing with, you know.
That's incredible.
It really gives you a sense of the scale of this technology.
Did he say anything about, like, the accuracy of the artillery?
He did. He was actually quite impressed by how accurate the shots were.
Really?
Some landing within 20 yards of the target.
That's pretty darn accurate.
It was crucial in World War II, that accuracy. Artillery often played a key role in, you know, softening up enemy defenses before an attack or disrupting enemy movements.
It's one thing to read about it in a textbook, right? But to hear this officer's firsthand account, his awe at the power and precision.
It really brings history to life.
Absolutely.
And remember, this was still relatively early in the war.
Right.
Artillery technology was constantly evolving, becoming even more powerful and sophisticated as the conflict progressed.
Makes you wonder about the impact these demonstrations had on the officers.
Right. This was likely a whole new level of firepower for many of them.
I mean, imagine seeing that for the first time.
It probably drove home the reality of the kind of conflict they were about to enter.
And maybe sparked some anxieties about, you know, being on the receiving end of such a barrage.
He does mention that, yeah.
What does he say?
That while he found the demonstration fascinating, he wouldn't want to be on the target end of that kind of firepower.
Understandable.
It's a moment of reflection, you know, underscore the duality of his experience.
I see what you mean.
He's in awe of the technology, the destructive force it represents, but there's this underlying awareness of the human cost involved.
That's a powerful reminder, isn't it?
Absolutely.
That behind the spectacle, behind the technical achievements, war ultimately comes down to people.
Exactly.
People making decisions, people facing the consequences.
And this letter, with its, you know, blend of personal observations and technical details, it really captures that multifaceted reality of war.
You know, besides the artillery demonstration, another detail that stood out to me was his observation of the soldiers marching through the streets.
Oh, yeah.
He talks about how their precision and discipline brought a vivid realization of the war's impact.
It's like that sight, the soldiers marching in formation. It crystallized the reality of the situation for him.
Right.
Suddenly, it wasn't just about training and exercises. It was about these young men preparing to face the horrors of war.
And he contrasts this with the reaction of some townspeople watching the march,
yeah.
Noting that they seem indifferent.
It's interesting. That contrast
really struck me.
It highlights the varying levels of engagement and awareness, even within a society at war, right?
I guess so.
Some are directly involved. Others are observing from a distance. And there's this whole spectrum of experiences in between.
It's a reminder that the war effort wasn't just happening on battlefields, right?
Absolutely.
It was woven into the fabric of daily life, impacting communities in different ways.
Precisely.
Some were deeply invested, while others tried to maintain a sense of normalcy amidst the upheaval.
And this officer, through his keen observations, provides a window into those diverse perspectives.
You know, going back to the training exercises, those knee-knocking drills he described,
yeah,
they still had me curious, you know? They sound brutal.
They don't sound like my idea of a fun workout either.
I know, right? But seriously, I wonder if there were any. So it was about building endurance.
Both physical and mental.
It really makes you appreciate the level of conditioning these soldiers underwent.
Absolutely.
It wasn't just about knowing how to use a weapon. It was about being able to withstand extreme physical and psychological stress.
And those knee-knocking exercises,
yeah,
as uncomfortable as they sound, might have played a role in building that resilience.
Okay, shifting gears a bit here.
Right.
One thing that surprised me about this letter was the overall tone.
Interesting.
I mean, here he is in the middle of a war, facing harsh conditions, witnessing firsthand the destructive power of modern weaponry.
Mm-hmm.
Yet there's this underlying sense of optimism.
Yes. That struck me as well.
Really?
Despite the seriousness of his situation, he seems genuinely enthusiastic about his work, about the opportunity to contribute to the war effort.
That's pretty remarkable.
He even finds moments of beauty and humor amidst the chaos. Like when he describes the Mississippi sunset as gorgeous.
Oh, yeah.
Or when he pokes fun at himself for needing to wear his winter coat indoors, remember?
It's like, even in the midst of all this, he's holding on to those small joys, you know?
Finding reasons to smile.
Exactly.
It speaks to a certain resilience.
I think so.
A determination to find light in the darkness.
And it's that spirit, I think, that ability to find hope and even humor in challenging times,
yeah,
that makes this letter so compelling.
It humanizes the historical narrative, doesn't it?
It does, yeah.
It reminds us that even in the midst of a global conflict, individuals were still experiencing life. Right. Finding moments of beauty and connection.
Absolutely. It's not just about battles and strategies. It's about the human experience of war.
And this officer's letter, with its vivid descriptions and thoughtful reflections, it offers us a glimpse into that experience.
Before we wrap up, I'd love to hear what resonated most with you personally.
That's a good question.
What really stood out from this letter?
For me, it's the officer's willingness to grapple with the moral complexities of his situation.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, interesting.
He's not just blindly following orders.
Yeah, I see that.
He's questioning, reflecting, trying to make sense of the ethical dilemmas he encounters.
Like his feelings about the court-martial case.
Precisely. He acknowledges the soldier's good record, expresses some reservations about the severity of the punishment.
Right.
It shows a depth of character, a capacity for empathy that I find quite admirable.
It makes him more relatable, wouldn't you say?
Absolutely. It reminds us that even in the midst of a global conflict, individuals still retain their own sense of right and wrong.
Their own moral compass.
Exactly.
So as we step back from this deep dive,
yeah,
what do you think is the most important takeaway for our listeners?
I think this letter serves as a powerful reminder that history is made up of countless individual stories.
That's a good point.
Each one unique, each one offering a valuable perspective on the past.
And sometimes those stories can be found in the most unexpected places.
Absolutely.
Like a simple letter tucked away in a box somewhere.
Exactly. And these personal narratives often provide insights that we might miss in traditional historical accounts.
So if you could ask this officer just one question.
Oh, wow.
What would it be?
That's a tough one. There's so much I'd want to know.
I know, right?
But I think I'd ask him about his hopes for the future.
His hopes for the future.
What did he envision for himself, for the world, once the war was over?
That's a beautiful question.
It reminds us that even in the darkest of times, people still dared to dream of a better tomorrow.
And those dreams, those aspirations, they're just as much a part of history as the battles and the treaties.
I think so.
So to our listeners, we leave you with that question. What would you ask this officer if you had the chance?
Let his story spark your curiosity.
Ignite your imagination.
And inspire you to explore the countless other voices waiting to be heard from the past.
Because, as we've seen today, these personal narratives have the power to transport us back in time, connect us to the human experience, and enrich our understanding of the world.
Absolutely.
Until next time, keep exploring, keep questioning, and keep diving deep.